Our sermon today comes from both these texts, the 1 Corinthians text that I read earlier, and now John chapter 2, verses 13 through 22. Follow me there if you will. John 2, 13 through 22, and listen to these words for the word of the Lord. It was nearly time for the Jewish Passover, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. He found in the temple those who were selling cattle and sheep and doves, as well as those who were involved in exchanging the currencies that were sitting there. And he made a whip from the ropes that were close by and chased them all out of the temple, including the cattle and the sheep. He scattered the coins and overturned the tables of those who exchanged the currency. He said to the dove sellers, "Get these things out of here. Don't make my Father's house a place of business." His disciples remembered that it is written, "Passion for your house consumes me." When the Jewish leaders asked him, "By what authority do you do these things? What miraculous sign will you show us?" Jesus said, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." The Jewish leaders replied, "It took 46 years to build this temple, and you will raise it up in 3 days?" But Jesus was talking about the temple of his body. After he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered what he had said, and they believed the scripture and the word which Jesus had spoken. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Jesus was speaking in a context of history, and everyone there was already aware that the temple had been destroyed twice already and that it had been raised up, but it certainly took longer than 3 days. And we know from history that it would be destroyed again and that it would not be rebuilt. What you see there today when you go to the temple is one wall and a little bit of a corner that is still standing. It's what they call the Wailing Wall, where they go to tuck their prayers in the cracks between the bricks. It's a wonder it's still standing. But it's considered a holy place. But Jesus was not talking about bricks and stone, about walls. He was talking about building a dwelling, a temple for God inside your own spirit. He was talking about welcoming God's Spirit, God's presence into yourself so that God could dwell in you. That's a different kind of temple. That's one that we all carry around with us. And because of the Holy Spirit, we believe that God does reside with us and in us and around us, and that our bodies should indeed be hospitable to that and be welcoming to that. Our spirits as well should be hospitable to receiving God's Spirit among us. It's an awesome thing to welcome God into your life, to welcome God's grace, God's saving grace through Jesus Christ, to welcome that into your lives and become not only a recipient but a bearer of it, to share it with others. Nothing like that is magic, though, to make us always make the right decisions and do the right things. Even when we know the decisions, sometimes we still choose the wrong pathway. But maybe our failures make a foundation for our future, for our growth. Hard times do bring growth, we know that, and sometimes they bring resolve to do things differently. Think back over your own life and think how many times you have grown from failing, or at least grown from challenges. Discipline is another word for it. It's working to the edges. Whether you're a parent raising a family or a coach training a basketball team, well, you work to the edges until you're worn out and sore and hurting. No pain, no gain, right? When you come to the edge, you get a second wind and you go again. I think growing in faith can be like that too. We grow faith best when we come to the edges of it. here in the middle of Lent, the cross of Jesus Christ, and all of our talk about the cross and bearing the cross is just such an edge. I'd like to submit to you today that we should build our efforts. We should build our lives around the cross and let the cross become a foundation. In my college town, there was a church that was rather well known at Christmas time for their outdoor live singing Christmas tree. My friend invited me to the special performance, and I looked forward to it. There was a large steel cross out in the front lawn of that church sanctuary. And although I knew the look of that cross pretty well, just from having driven past it many times, I had not seen it, or any cross, I think, decorated for Christmas. The two just don't seem to kind of go together. But their giant cross had been used as a structural frame for their outdoor lighted Christmas tree. Now, that's a contrast. It was many feet tall, and when the people were installed up in the rows of that to become that living Christmas tree, their faces, their layers of faces and their colorful costumes, singing Christmas carols, I said Christmas carols, and lighted on the top with a great star. A star on the top of a cross. Does that seem right? Something kind of twisted about that, or maybe something holy about it. A star on a cross. I don't know. What does it mean for a happy person to live a good life and to deny himself or herself and take up a cross? Well, we're all naturals at making our own decisions. And when we take up a cross, we're asking somebody else, Christ in particular, to make decisions for us. But we still want to drive. We still want to be in control. I have no final answer on the star and the cross and the mix of Christmas and Easter, but I did gain some insight from Fred Craddock, a well-known preacher. In a sermon on this text, he spoke about commitment and sacrifice and grand gestures. And he told this story. He said, a wealthy man went to his priest with a check for $50,000 and made it out to the church. He handed the check to the priest, and the priest looked at it. It was a lot of money. And then the priest handed it back to him and said, go now and cash it in. Turn it in for quarters and dollar bills and spend 50 cents or a dollar at a time doing the Lord's work. The man exclaimed, but that'll take me the rest of my life. And the priest nodded his head. You're right. It will. That's the point. Because if we let the cross become a structure for our lives and we build around it, like they built that Christmas tree with all the singing voices around it, it becomes the structure on which everything is based. Now, a cross is a pretty interesting piece of architecture. It's one of the simplest constructs, just two pieces. And yet those pieces have profound symbolism. You know, the cross has become a popular jewelry item. You can even see that in movies. You can see it on the big screen when the stars come out for the award ceremonies. Lots of people wear crosses. Some people even have crosses tattooed on them so that they advertise it. And yet, I'm not sure that they really get what it means. If we look at the cross, there is the vertical part that is a connection with God. But there is also the horizontal part that is our outreach and our fellowship with humankind and one another. It's profound. It's two pieces. It's a solid structure. And it's a great structure on which to build a life. That's what Craddock was suggesting, that this person, rather than writing a big check, begin to structure his life according to outreach to fellow humankind who were struggling in the name of Christ, whom we worship, and to structure his life according to to that cross. That's not an easy way to live. I would never tell you it is. When we want our own way, nothing's really ever too easy. Half our problems come from wanting our own way, and maybe the other half of our problems come from getting it sometimes. Stepping off the path. Mother Teresa heard of a family of 9 members who were starving to death, and she hurriedly obtained some rice and went to see the family, giving them enough rice to prepare at least a meal. But the woman divided the rice into 2 piles, and she placed 1 pile in a bag and started to leave. Mother Teresa asked her where she was going, and the woman said she was going to visit another family who she knew was starving also. That's living in the shadow of the cross. That's building your life around the structure of a cross. I saw a painting one time that was a picture of Jesus working in the carpenter's wood shop. He was planing down on a large beam which was laying on the workbench there. But because of the singular light that dimly lit the room, that shop was aglow. The beam that was laying on the work table and the stature of Jesus standing near it made a shadow of a cross on the wall behind him. A shadow that looked for the world like the cross that Jesus would die on. In the picture, as you study it, you realize that Jesus himself, with his back to that wall, is not aware of the cross. That's the foreboding shadow on the wall. But as a viewer of the picture, you can see it. And it's a foreshadowing, quite literally, shadowing of what is to come. Jesus' life, as he lived it, was centered on that cross. There was a little boy in worship who was just learning about addition and subtraction in school, and he looked up during worship one day, sitting with his family. He saw the cross sitting on the altar, and he hollered out, "Look, Daddy, there's a plus sign in our church." The cross really is a plus sign in our church. It's a plus sign in our lives daily. It tells us of the advantages of being Christian and of accepting the forgiveness that God offers us through the cross. Through the cross, God did what only God could do, transformed a horrible instrument of torture and death into a symbol of life and hope, a plus sign. God transformed tragedy into triumph, humiliation into glory, despair into hope. God took what was ugly and made it into a thing of beauty. Took what was cruel and violent and made it into a symbol of peace. The cross has evolved into a piece of jewelry. We dare to wear it, often casually. I think we dare even more when we wear it with meaning, with knowing what it stands for and how we bear it, as Jesus did. An admirer once asked Leonard Bernstein, celebrated orchestra conductor, "What is the hardest instrument to play?" And he replied without hesitation, "Second fiddle." "I can get plenty of first violinists," he said, "but it's hard to get someone to play second violin with as much enthusiasm, or second French horn, or second flute, or whatever. It's a problem. And yet, if no one plays those parts, we have no harmony." Structuring our lives around the humility of Jesus' teaching and the sign of the cross will give us that kind of humility. And it will encourage us to take up our crosses, whatever they may be. And some of you, I know, have large ones. We all do from time to time. When we take up our cross and ask Christ to help us carry it, it's going to get a little bit or a whole lot lighter. It's putting ourselves aside, learning to live in His shadow, learning to live for Him, learning to structure our lives around the cross and Jesus' humble approach to it. Learning to see the shadow on the wall and recognize that life is not perfect, but that Christ will show us the way to the cross and beyond the cross. That great hymn, "Just a Closer Walk with Thee," puts it like this: "I am weak, but Thou art strong. Jesus, keep me from all wrong. I'll be satisfied as long as I walk. Let me walk close to Thee. Just a closer walk with Thee. Grant it, Jesus, that's my plea. Daily walking close to Thee. Let it be, dear Lord, let it be." I'll close with a story about Rodin, the artist. One day he saw a huge carved crucifix on a roadside, and he immediately fell in love with the artwork and insisted on having it for himself. He purchased that cross and arranged to have it carted back to his home, but unfortunately, it was too big for the building. Wouldn't even fit through the door. So, of all things, Rodin had the door enlarged. He had the walls partly knocked out. He raised the roof line of his house and he rebuilt his entire home around that cross. When you hear the call to Jesus' radical discipleship, I hope that you, too, will decide to knock down the walls and rebuild your life around the cross. That is always an option for us. And we are at our best when we choose it, when we choose to let the cross provide the structure for our lives and our future. Remember, Jesus said, "If any want to be my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me."